Welcome to episode 70 of Out FBH Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English language Out FBH Stuttgart fan podcast where our views are unofficial, uninformed, and usually unprepared. But if you watched the last two matches with Bruno, I think he's doing us a favor, and he has kept almost everything identically the same, from the lineups to the tactics to the mistakes to the results. So even two people that are unprepared like us are actually, I think, somewhat qualified to talk about this. And this is kind of a special episode because Matt, who is joining me, Matt, this is your 32nd episode. And as we like to do with you, we play the numbers game. Did you know that the current number 32 for VfB Stuttgart is the much maligned, the enigmatic Nairoi Ahamada? How about that?
It had not occurred to me that that's Ahamada's number, but it feels appropriate for this. Something that's been up and down and a lot of promise, not a lot of delivery. Very on brand.
Yeah. Speaking of on brand, my name is Travis. You can reach me at Hazelfish. You can reach us on the Twitter machine at VFB Americana or on the internet at VFB Stuttgart Americana. Matt, I'm really disappointed that Ahamada is the key kind of news piece this week, because the other number 32s, and I knew that this would be one of your favorites because he wore it not once but twice, was our old friend right back Andreas Beck. And I was hoping that you would pick him as one of your favorite former 32s, but you also have Timo Baumgartel to pick as well, who is currently playing for Union Berlin. So of those three, any of those stick out?
So Timo Baumgartel was a guy that I latched onto early on in my Stuttgart fandom, because I looked at him and I was like, that's a big lanky dude at defense. Bet he's real good. And he's kind of turned into a putz at Union. So I guess I'll have to go with the two-timer Und Beck.
Andreas Beck was a champion with the team back in 06-07 by the bye. And got nothing but really shade from the fandom when he came back the second time around. I always thought he was a cog that kind of made the whole, you know, piece work. And then I think, did we get relegated with Andreas or not? I can't remember at this point.
I think we did. And it was, I think he was a classic case of a guy who has slowed down and not quite realized it, and didn't compensate appropriately and was trying to play like he had 10 years earlier, and his body couldn't quite keep up with it.
I always liked him. He ended up going to Belgium and retiring. So we've got Andreas, we've got Timo, we've got Ahamada for this episode. So I don't know, some of those guys are really stepping up. You know what? We do have some shout outs to provide though. You know, for our official fan club, a big shout out to Fish1893 for winning the Tippspiel VfB Stuttgart prediction machine. He scored 23 points, his first win. So congratulations there.
Well done.
Yep. Doug is currently in the lead overall, though. In our fantasy Bundesliga, VfB Lucas Stott 18 narrowly defeated me by 2 points this week. This is his fifth win in our Bundesliga fantasy OFC championship. Our Twitter score predictions, Bloody has and Dave both accurately predicted the results of the last two matches. So we promised them, Matt, a shout out on the podcast. So
great job, guys.
Well done, fellas. Celebration for everybody. That's pretty much all the shout outs. Anything else we should shout out before we get this one going?
I want to shout out the flag that you've got flying behind you, because it just looks sharp.
It's a nice flag that nobody can see because we're not on the YouTube yet, which is probably a good thing.
Use your imagination, listeners.
Speaking of imagination, Matt, what do you say? Should we try to get this one going?
Let's get on with it.
We're going to kind of mash all of the last information from the last two matches together. We had VfB at home playing Mainz. We had VfB on the road playing Hoffenheim in a midweek match. Thoughts going into this one, Matt, or going into these matches? There was all kinds of chaos in the upper management between Klaus Vogt and board members and sporting directors. There's all kinds of stuff going on there. The stadium was sold out, though, for the home match, and it was around 30 degrees, so it was around freezing. Over 3,000 traveled to Hoffenheim, and they were loud as could be over there. I expected some kind of showing from the ultras to express their displeasure with what has been happening in the upper management, but I didn't see anything there at all. Did you have any kind of expectations going into these two really quick matches to start up 2023?
If the Mainz game had gone sideways, I expected a lot of whistles and jeering from the crowd. I think people are skeptical of the move, and if we get results, people will jump on board pretty quick. And if we don't, we'll hear about it. So I was expecting Stuttgart to come out, honestly, a little bit more aggressively than they did. I thought we started the Mainz game kind of passively. And I know that's Bruno's thing, is play defense first and deal with everything else. But still a little surprised that we didn't come out and try and punch Mainz in the face real quick before we went into a shell.
Yeah, it was interesting because the Hoffenheim match and the Mainz match, we joked about it at the beginning of this episode, were almost identical. The lineups were the same. The mistakes were the same. The changes at halftime were the same. The results at the end of the day were basically the same, a point in each. I predicted a draw in the first match. I thought Hoffenheim would win in the second match, so I guess we're ahead of what I thought. You predicted results for Vape in both of these matches.
It's wishful thinking.
Because we could have had potentially 6 points in these two matches, ended up with two. I mean, what do you think? Is that
good? That's kind of been the story of the last 2 years, right? We were almost getting all the points we could. We're really close, and a couple dumb mistakes are the difference. So on aggregate, really, we're not seeing a lot different. I mean, the team looked a lot different. The play style was different. So a lot of changes have gone in, but the end results, it's pretty much status quo.
It reminds me a little bit of our family cookies. The Hasler family cookies are from 150 some years ago. I'm very proud that they're Schwabian cookies, and the recipe has been modified over the years. And one year my grandmother sent me the recipe and I couldn't read this one particular ingredient, and I thought I made it out. So I put in a pound of what I thought it was, and it was carrots. You know, it's a cookie of, you know, whatever. So a pound of carrots. It turned out it was currants that it was supposed to be, not carrots. Here's the thing. Nobody could tell the difference in the cookies, which to tell you a lot about the cookies. Bruno's playing a different style than Reno. He's playing players in different positions in Reno, but the results and everything seems to be the exact same as Reno, like you said.
Yeah, he mixed a bunch of carrots in there instead of Reno's currants, and here we are.
You know, listening to both matches, I realized we need to create a bingo card for these matches, because we should have a drinking game that every time they mention Bruno Labbadia is back again, or Legendo's goal in match day 34 last season, or they were champions as recently as 2007. I mean, we should just, everybody should grab a shot and go for it, because it just seems like they're kind of recycling the same storylines every match now.
I love this idea, and I would love to see people post on Twitter what they think the lines should be, that should go on the bingo card. And then maybe we can get Martin Panic to draw us up a fancy looking bingo card.
Oh yes, his help. Speaking of the skill, the lineup was the same for both, using it's weird because we talked about with last episode with Rob that Bruno's forced to play with younger players and with youth, because that's what this team has. There isn't a lot of veteran players, but he went to his traditional 4-3-3 like we expected both matches. Going back to what you said, you expected him to come out a little bit more aggressive in the Mainz match, but both were super defensive. You had Nardi on the left, you had Ito, Dino, and Anton on the right. You had Ada Karazorn, Endo in the midfield. The biggest criticism so far seems to be that there's this huge gap between the guys at the back who are kind of trying to hunker down and bunker down, and the three guys up front, Thiago Silas and Seru Girassi. And there's just all this space in the middle. I mean, I don't know. What is more surprising to you, that the team is playing this defensive, or that the two guys who had great camps Enzo Melo and Pascal Stenzel have seen zero playing time so far.
The defensive doesn't surprise me. And what I meant by, like, I thought they'd come out a little bit more aggressive is go and looking to get a goal in like the first 2 minutes or 5 minutes and go full blast and try and catch minds off guard and then step back and play, you know, settle in and play the game that you practiced and came to play. I am surprised. I'm more surprised to not see Enzo Melo. I saw so much buzz around him, and just, you know, you look at the lineup and Anton at right back, like, I'm not a Pascal Stenzel fan. I can't believe Anton's a better option at right back than Stenzel, who's a natural right back. Anton clearly looks lost out there.
I don't get it. And I think that's the number one criticism on Twitter that I've read, is that people don't get it either, is that he's a center back. And I know he's played center mid in the past, but he's not a right back. And he's certainly not a right wing back. And watching him try to initiate the offense on the right-hand side, it's not even painful because it's non-existent. And it's not his fault. And I say this as a guy who says that one of his favorite players is, you know, the Uzbeki German that is Valdemar Anton. He looks to me, especially when they put Endo on the one wing back side in the second half, and then they have Anton on the other wing back side. Back when I used to play FIFA, I would just randomly throw guys out there, and because it's a video game, and you
can, yeah.
Anton and Endo as wing backs to me, it just seems so out of position that I don't think it's a shock that we don't have no offense going on either of those wings. And we're so used to having something on the wings.
Yeah. And so we've got Anton at right back, who looks lost and looked throughout the Mainz game like he was trying to drift back into the middle where he instinctually thought he should be, which I get, totally understandable, not a knock on him. He's being asked to do something he's not comfortable with. So that's issue number one. Second, we've got Endo and Carazor on the field at the same time, two central defensive mids who play very similar games, and you're asking Endo to flex out on the wing. And of the two of those guys, he's the one more capable of doing that. But at the same time, like, he's best in that central defensive role with the occasional pop up front. And when you have somebody like Enzo Melo, who had such a great camp, like, why don't you move Endo to the middle, sit Carazor, and put Melo on the edge? It just doesn't make sense to me. And then you've got Melo and Ahamada. You can attack down either flank, and you've still got your safety blanket in Endo in the middle helping out the defense.
Yeah, I was curious at one point as to when you had Dino, Dan Axel, and Anton, and Ito, where are you going to play those four guys? Because there's really only two positions for them, center, back, right? We're going to have somebody on the left. We're going to have somebody on the right, more of a traditional fullback, kind of like when Andreas Beck was here as we start off. We're going to have right back, left back, and Emiliano and Sua, for example, something like that. And I like Valdemar Anton, but it is just like a square peg and a round hole there. I don't quite get it. At least Nardi on the other side has more of a midfield background, and he's not lighting the world on fire, but he looks a little bit more comfortable on that side.
I would think stick Ito out on as a wing back and leave Anton in the middle, because Ito's faster. Ito's played some left back, I think, mostly, but he's a flexible dude. Let's see what happens. It's a baffling decision.
Yeah, it's boggles my mind. I don't quite understand. You brought up Ito. Let's talk about him for a second. He seems to be – I made some notes of it in the Mainz match, and then we saw it again in the Hoffenheim match. Borna Sosa being out, who knows – you know, the good news is he was practicing this week, so he should be back relatively soon. Ito seems to be our free kick guy, our corner guy. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't hate it. Mm-hmm. He seems to be, you know, I didn't get to watch the Hoffenheim game, but I saw the Mainz game, and he was fine. He's not as effective as Borna Sosa, but that's asking a lot. It's like saying you don't shoot threes quite as good as Steph Curry. No duh. But yeah, he was fine.
Yeah, I don't mind that move at all. I'm glad Ito's on the pitch. He just seems to be very diverse and very flexible in a lot of different positions. And towards the last year when Pellegrino was here, he was doing a lot of switching, getting the ball left to right and things like that. So I don't see a problem with that at all. Let's talk about some of our problems, though. You can tell we're kind of doing a little recap of the matches against Hoffenheim and Mainz, but also kind of where things have stood, you know, for the first 17 matches. We're 17 matches into the season. We're at the traditional breaking point of where things are at. This team is at the exact same place on the table that they were. Actually, they're a little bit up. I'm sorry. They're in 15th place. Last year, they were in 16th place. So they're a little bit up. So I suppose that's improvement there. Hey, we got the Bruno bounce. All right. 2 points, 2 matches. Let's talk about Silas for a second. Silas signed a contract extension over the winter break, so everybody was super excited about that. The thing we were all hoping for is that Silas would get his form back a little bit. And some of us thought that with Bruno's system, where there's going to be a lot more of kind of breaks, breakouts, that he might have a chance to flourish a little bit with some of his individual play. The last 2 matches, haven't seen a lot of it.
He was mostly invisible in the Mainz match, and that's unfortunate. And gotta wonder if maybe there's some disconnect between him and Ahamada, or having Terrazor, who's more of a defender really than a defensive mid, running that center spoke role. If he's just not getting the ball and not getting opportunities, but also like a little concerning that he's not trying to generate some more of those, at least from what we can see on the broadcast.
I would think that his partner on the other wing, we mentioned this last couple episodes ago, Thiago Tomás is struggling. He got hurt in this last match against Hoffenheim. Bruno says he should be okay to play against Leipzig on Friday. I mean, the fact that this team has no money and the fact that Tomas is really young and he seems to be scuffling quite a bit, I mean, I think there's zero chance this team's going to purchase option on Thiago, which is around 15, 16 million. With Silas struggling on the one wing and Tomas struggling on the other wing, let's focus on the guy who's not struggling, which is Seru Girassi, who is just on fire. He had his 5th and 6th goal in the last 2 matches. The Hoffenheim match, we were lucky to be only down 1 by the time he scored. And yeah, it's been a long time since we've had a guy up front who is just, to use their phrase, ice cold in front of goal. I mean,
yeah,
I was very skeptical of that pickup because I remember Girassi from his time in Cologne. He's almost single-handedly keeping us above the relegation final three at this point. He's been playing great.
Yeah, and his goal against Mainz was a classic, you know, less is more kind of goal. A lot of the times you see, especially younger players, they get the ball real close to net, and it's kick the ball as hard as you can at the net. You want to make a big boom. and it was just the deft, little delicate touch to turn it the opposite direction. The goalkeeper was moving, and that was it. And that just, oh, it was beautiful. And it was so nice to see somebody in white and red making a move like that and not just hammering the ball into a keeper's face.
The easy person to say that remind you of was, you know, Kalajic, who was able to do things with his head, obviously, but also with his feet that he didn't get a lot of credit for. But you know who the guy he reminded me of a little bit, maybe not so much in the Bundesliga, but in the Zweite Liga, was Simon Toroda type of thing. Oh, the guy was just, you put him in front of the goal and he's going to do something to get that ball in. I mean, Girassi has been amazing, and thank goodness that Sven picked him up from the French league, the French bench, because he's the only guy who's really, you know, scoring any goals for us. But the guy who set him up for his goal against Hoffenheim is the guy who's getting all the attention. So let's take a minute to talk about our midfield friend, Ahamada. Young kid, right? I think he's only 19, 20 years old. So here's the deal. Against Mainz, he had the mistake that led to the penalty kick. Our sporting director, Volgemut, said, yeah, he'll never make that mistake again. Understood. It was a physical mistake. He kicked the Mainz player. He didn't see the Mainz player coming. Totally mistake.
Yeah.
Against Hoffenheim, he made the mistake of not clearing the ball that led to the first Hoffenheim goal. And then he led to the mistake of rushing into the stands after Endo scored the second goal to get his red card so that we were now down 10 men. And Vogelbund said again, he'll never make that mistake again. To have your boss say in a matter of, 4 days that you'll never make that mistake again twice in a row, I'm really glad we didn't record last night, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because we try to take the 24-hour rule, and my response 24 hours ago was going to be much different than my response now, which is the kid is young, he made a mistake, he was passionate. I'm guessing the official could have turned a blind eye to it. I read some articles that no, he couldn't. I also know that this a particular official has given, in the four matches he's officiated, Stuttgart has gotten 3 red cards in those 4 matches. So I'm not saying that it's his fault. I'm maybe saying he's got a quick whistle a little bit. Let's talk about Ahamada for a second. How do you think he's doing with Bruno? He's been linked to the Premier League, which is just shocking to me. The floor is yours.
He's frustrating, right? He's got so much promise. And he does some things out in the field that you see and you're like, yes, thank you. More of that, please. And then he kicks a guy in the back of the leg and you're like, no, thank you, sir. I don't want any more of that. In Bogomut's defense, he did not make the kicking the guy a mistake again. He made other brand new, fresh mistakes. I also know that if my boss had to tell somebody that I wouldn't make that same mistake again twice in the course of about 4 days, we'd be having a real serious sit down and discussion about my decision making. So I want him to be great. I don't know. We've got so many kids like this, right? Like Enzo Malo is like this too. We want him so bad to be great. With Alexis Tivity kind of doing better and potentially coming back, maybe. If we can sell him to the Premier League for $20 million, because Premier League players, they overpay for everybody. Like, I think you do that and say thank you very much.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's Crystal Palace is the team he was linked to. It was somewhere between 5 to 8, I think. That might be a little bit high from what I heard or what I read. No,
$20 million was extremely over-exaggerating. But yeah, if we could even get 5 to 8, like how much are we going to get from him on the field? It's great to see him, but how many projects can we have at once?
Right. And I think the one thing where I will agree with Beryl, which probably is an unpopular thing, is listen, we are in a relegation dogfight and we have a pretty big roster. And at some point you're going to nail it down to 15, 16, 17 guys, right? Yeah. I was actually shocked that Malo was benched in favor of Ahamada. Not saying that I didn't like Ahamada, but I really liked what I was seeing from Enzo Malo and did not see him play at all in 2023. And I watched 2 of the 3 friendlies and he seemed to play a big role in what was happening. And to not see him at all is kind of shocking to me. He'll obviously have his chance now with Ahamada, you know, with his red card suspension. But I was more of a Malo guy than an Ahamada guy. So I'm okay with this decision to move it. Where I will defend Ahamada is I don't like him on the wing. I think he's more of an internal midfield guy. But having him play right wing where he's at now, I don't think serves his potential where he's strongest.
So here's a crazy theory. Are they putting Ahamada out on the field because there are these Crystal Palace rumors and Palace wants to see more? And so they're doing that, and that's why Malo's not playing right now, and the goal is to sell Ahamada and then slide Malo in there. So that's crazy tinfoil hat theory. I agree with your point that he's better in the center, but we're playing a 4-3-3. We've only got 2 central positions. He's not going to displace Chirassi up top. Maybe he doesn't really have a home on this team right now, which would be another good reason to sell him off to Crystal Palace.
Yeah, that's actually, I don't think that's a crazy theory at all, considering how broke this club is right now. I think putting a guy out there so we can see. But to parlay your theory, I'm going to say that Ahamada loves Stuttgart so much that he is making as many as mistakes as possible to downgrade his value so he will wear the Brewster ring forever.
Or maybe he's just getting the mistakes out of the way now so that he won't have them, because he's never going to make them again. And at some point, he'll run out of mistakes to never make again, and then he'll be perfect.
That's why I've been married multiple times, because eventually I'll get it down perfect.
Travis, you'll never make that mistake again.
you sound like my attorney. All right. So let's talk about the guy who's putting them out on the pitch. So Bruno's put out the same lineup for two matches in a row, which I was kind of surprised. The 4-3-3. He's made the same tactical change. I do want to give Bruno a little shout out here, though. His celebration after any goal that Stuttgart scores. Say what you will about the guy. He does have passion. He does want to win. You can just tell. He goes nuts on the sidelines. I really do kind of appreciate that. I get the sense that he wants this redemption story to work. I think any coach who has any ego at all wants to prove the doubters wrong, right? And for the most part, everywhere on social media, everywhere on any kind of press, there's doubters for this guy. And so if they can get some results and he can do Redemption Story 2.0 with this club, I think this is going to, he'll probably be an egomaniac after this if it succeeds.
Totally.
But I do want to give him a little bit of a shout out that you can tell he is on edge with this club. He wants this club to be successful. And the other thing I want to talk about for real quick is the players. We used to always say, well, okay, they're making all these mistakes under Reno, but they're playing for Reno and they're playing, tough. These players aren't quitting. It's a new coaching staff, it's a new system. It seems like a different philosophy. These guys don't quit, they don't give up. They make mistakes. They're sometimes really silly mistakes, but you can't question the fight. Just look at Dino Mavropanos. You can't question the fight and the effort of these guys. And I do really appreciate that. So shout out to Bruno and his passion. Shout out to the players. We can question their intelligence sometimes on the pitch, but I'm not going to question their heart.
No, they continue to play really hard, and the things that we've been hearing, like out of camp, was that some of the players felt a lot of relief to be playing in this new system that Lavadia is putting them in, and that they thought Reno's system was kind of overly complicated and was creating its own issues. And so you've been hearing a lot of positive, and nobody said a bad word about Reno the man. It's been more about like, hey, this style wasn't quite working for us, and the players are saying the right things that you want to hear them say. He Labadie is a dude with a lot of pride, I'm sure, and he's a competitor. And if he wasn't, he wouldn't be in the job that he's in. And he wants to win. And I think you're right. He 1,000% wants to be the man who saved Stuttgart twice, and never pay for a beer again in Bad Cannstatt.
The guy who I think might be single-handedly saving Stuttgart, and not to put you on the spot here, but if we were going to do an MVP over the first 17 matches, I think Endo would be a tough guy to dethrone. I think Gerassi has played just so well, he'd be tough to dethrone. But I think Dino Mavropanos, I want to talk about him for a moment. He was bandaged up. He was bleeding like crazy. That guy is the heart and soul, I think, of this team. He's passionate. When Ahamada made his mistake, Dino was the first one to get in his face, almost like a father figure or an older brother, and be like, dude, what are you doing? Dino, I don't, my hot take, ooh, this is Dino's last season with us. Come relegation or survival, I don't think we're holding on to this guy past this year. But I'm going to enjoy every part of this year because, like I just mentioned with Bruno's passion, that's the only way this dude plays, Dino. There was a great picture on Twitter today about, there's that picture of Dino over the summer where he's got his shirt off and he's jacked and he's bronzed up from the sun. And it's like, this is what Valby Stewart fans feel like at the beginning of the year. And there's a picture of Dino with a bandage on his head and a black eye and blood on his jersey from the Hoffenheim match. And it's like, this is what Valby Stewart fans feel like right now after 17 match days. So to me, like I said, Endo, Gerassi, Dino, Dino is just such a key player for this team the first 17 matches so far.
Yeah, and he's a great avatar for us. Like we had talked about how Sven was the avatar of the fan base, right? We don't have him anymore. And the closest thing I think we have now is Dino and his just super pumped, electric thunder headers when he gets them. And just, he's fun. And like you want to say Jurassic because of his cool touch, but we haven't seen Jurassic a whole ton this year on the pitch. Endo's a phenomenal leader. He's a phenomenal player, but he's a very quiet, lead by example, take care of business dude. So for the fan base, he's somebody you're maybe not going to get quite as excited about on a consistent basis. But Dino brings something every match that we can get excited about and have at least a little takeaway from the game of that was cool.
You missed it because during the Hoffenheim match, there was a moment where Dino broke up a Hoffenheim run and had one of his Dino power runs where it was Dino versus three other shirts in blue. And he was just going full bore. And there was he lost the touch there at the end and he was kind of down in their box. And the announcer's like, Stuttgart's missing one of their defenders right now. Who's down there? I was so hoping he would do a thunderbolt shot, but it didn't come to be, but he's definitely, he's the avatar now that Sven is gone. A couple of other Sven signings looked really good on the Hoffenheim match. So unfortunately there was two injuries, right? Thiago was hurt, but hopefully he'll be okay for Leipzig. Silas was hurt, but Bruno says also he should be okay for Leipzig. But what we did get to see was Chris Führich again. He came on really early for Thiago in the first half. And the guy that I've been calling for since he was signed was Juan Perea. Mm-hmm. He also looked great in the Hoffenheim match. Now, I know you weren't able to watch that one, but Perea was just causing all kinds of chaos on the right-hand side. Führich was doing the same thing on the left-hand side. And while Hoffenheim dominated the first 30-35 minutes of the match, the second half, the first 25-30 minutes was all Stuttgart, and Perea was just wrecking havoc on the right. And Führich looks like one of our best players. When he came in on the left, he had a cross that was just narrowly missed. I was just really excited to see Perea in. It's really good to see Führich out there because we don't have a lot of guys with pace that can do what he does on that left-hand side. And so shout out to Bruno for putting those guys in and giving them a chance.
Yeah, and we've all been hoping to see more of Perea, and you in particular have been, as you said, beating that particular drum. But I've been a big Chris Führich fan since we signed him. I didn't know him at all, but watching him right away, I was like, this is a dude who can cause some good chaos. And glad you're given an opportunity to do that in Hoffenheim.
The one thing that is a bummer as we head out of this segment is that in the Hoffenheim match, there was a great chance for Führich had a pass over to Perea. In the Mainz match, there was a great chance by Anton and then Jurassic after an individual play by Silas to make a cross. We hit the post a couple times. This goes back to what you said earlier, and then one of the questions we'll have at the end of the podcast is, no matter who's playing or who the coach is luck just not on our side? I hate to be that guy, but it's like, the officials for the last two matches, our good old friend Dr. Brick and this guy Badstuber who ref the previous match. I'm sorry, Dr. Brick, I know you're one of the best officials, but Dino Mavropanos got kicked in the thigh in the Mainz match. And there was a foul, but it was studs up, no yellow at all. And I'm just like, I'm not blaming the refs per se. As much as I am, I'm sure he would have made the same bad call against another team. I don't think it's like he hates Stuttgart.
Your tinfoil hat is not big enough. Dr. Felix Bryce, you know this. You're putting me on my soapbox here. I've been saying in our group chat for literal years, the man hates Stuttgart. He hates Stuttgart. And I don't think he's one of the best refs in the Bundesliga. And I'll say that, and I'll stand by it. I don't think he's that great, and he hates Stuttgart. I would take half a Bibiana Steinhaus over Felix Breich every single day. And I miss her because she was the best ref in the Bundesliga, and she's gone, and it sucks.
Where did she go?
She retired.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Also, I also kind of caution the way that I talk about Dr. Brick, because I know that I don't have to go crazy because you will.
That's fair.
Yeah, so I come off as the same one here. But it was just stuff off the bar. It's like, no matter whether it's Reno or Bruno, it's the same thing. It's just...
As long as I'm on tinfoil hat watch here with the Ahamada transfer and my bright case sugar theory, the other ref was a Badstuber. Perhaps a relative of one Holger Badstuber.
I'm not even going to look it up because I hope it's true.
Hang on a minute. Let me get my red yarn out here and we'll connect these dots.
While we're connecting the dots, I do want to give a shout out as well to the 3,000 traveling fans. It was weird because the Mainz match was so cold that it was for the first time in a long time I heard two things. I heard the traveling fans in Mercedes-Benz be louder than the Stuttgart fans. And that's weird, Matt. It's something we pride ourselves on, is that our fans are just so amazing. Our supporters are so amazing. But I think you mentioned it earlier, is that there's a gut punch right now with the support. And it was also 30 degrees, so maybe it was just too cold to actually cheer too much. But at the Hoffenheim match, they were bonkers. They were loud. That's all you heard. There were a couple times I'll give Hoffenheim supporters some credit. You heard them. But for the most part, it was a traveling fan. So I want to give a big shout-out just to those men and women who were doing the heavy lifting over there, traveling all over the place and being as loud as you can be so we can hear it on the old TV.
Thanks, guys.
All right, so congratulations to Seru Drossi. You were the OFCR, Official Fan Club Man of the Match, for the Mainz match. That's your second time this year, so I'm sure you're very excited about that. And Dino Mavropanos, you were the Man of the Match for the Hoffenheim match. That's your third time, which is a leading vote-getter. So, Dino, you may be in the running for OFC Player of the Year.
He is OFC Player of the Year in my wife's heart for sure.
Yeah, Dino, keep your shirt on, buddy. That's all.
Yeah.
Right, let's move on to part three, news and headlines. You mentioned his name earlier. So Alexis Tibbety, who played for the club last season but had some discipline issues and was loaned to an Austrian team, has had a really great season for the team that he's playing for. He's got 5 goals and an assist in 16 matches. But a French team in their League One is courting him. As of today, it looks like it's all said and done, that the transfer is going to go. Stuttgart is going to get a little bit of money for this. The club that he's loaned to is going to get a little bit of money. I think we're talking about $2-3 million for Stuttgart. He's going to end up back in the French league. He's a left winger. He's had a lot of success. It's weird because people are concerned, like, if we could hold on to this guy, we could triple or quadruple that money in a year or two because he's got the talent. We saw it when he played for the club. People are also upset because there's a conspiracy theory that the money used by this transfer is going to be used to purchase Giovoggi, who is a number 6 from Wolfsburg, who Bruno Labbadia is hot to get. There's a lot of links, a lot of rumors between us, Stuttgart, and Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg has tried to shut it down. And I don't know if that's because they're driving up the price. The problem is his salary is about $2 to $3 million a year. Wolfsburg wants about $500,000 for the transfer. This guy's transfer, his contract runs out at the end of this season. So they want to get a little bit of cash. He is on their bench. He's not playing, but he's apparently a fantastic locker room guy. He's a leader, but he's 32. He's a classic number 6. He knows Bruno's system. Bruno and him have a history together when Bruno was at Wolfsburg. But the rumor is that Stuttgart would sign him for a 2 to 2.5 year deal at 32. And the reason why this is a big deal for a lot of these supporters is that this seems like a blast from the past when we were signing a lot of older players in the 2010s who were past their prime. I don't know anything about this guy. His track record seems to be fantastic. He seems to be a fantastic leader, captain, all those things. Who knows if we're going to get him. Boy, oh boy. It just doesn't sound great.
So I started to be kind of excited, and then you talked me down off of that mountain. So well done. You and I specifically have been saying for a while that one of the things this team lacks is a veteran presence. So I could see, as long as the idea isn't like, here's our new horse and we're going to ride him. If it's bring him in to be a component, an add-on piece, a sub off the bench, or a guy who plays, you know, 50 minutes and then get subbed out, something like that. I don't love the 2 years, but if you do the 2 years to get his salary down to something that the club can afford, yeah, all right, we could do some creative math. So I don't hate the idea, especially if he's somebody who Lavadia knows can come in and preach the gospel of Lavadia and help from an on-field perspective get the team moving in the direction he wants to make it go. All right, I don't hate it.
I just think that's actually a great point. Like you said, I don't understand though. So this basically would mean that I would think that Otta Karazor is gone, that you don't need Otta Karazor anymore. I don't love the idea of Endo playing on the wing in a 4-3-3. I love the idea of Endo playing in the middle, but if this guy's a number six, where does Endo go? I don't think he's as effective on the edge as he is in the middle. The 2 years. Now, I know being 32, 33, 34 nowadays isn't what it was, you know, 10, even 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So he's not like he's ancient. Alexis Tippity said he's not coming back to Stuttgart. So he is doing a little Pablo Mafio. Hey, shout out Pablo, who said, yeah, I hate that place. I'm not going back. So if you can get something for Alexis, then you got to do it, because he's had a bad experience here. Apparently, he doesn't want to come back, whatever. Using that money, though, to buy a third. Oh, boy. I've never seen the guy play. I tried to look up a highlight of him. That's how I learned to pronounce his name. And I've said it once, so you can see how well that went. Giavoghi. There you go.
Perfect.
Yeah, I don't know. If a number six is the thing that's going to keep us in the Bundesliga, okay, I'm in. But if a number six is what is going to keep us in the Bundesliga, boy, we got bigger issues than I thought.
I don't think he's the answer to our problems. He might be a piece that helps push us. Maybe part of the idea is get somebody who can give Endo a little bit of a break, because we've put a lot of miles on Endo and he's playing a lot of international duty and all well-deserved. He's a superstar. But we have Karazor as his replacement. And so if the idea is to sell off Karazor, then what? We need an alternative if Endo goes down, or if Endo just needs a freaking breather.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just curious how this, because Karazor is one of the louder players on the pitch from everything we've read. So I basically see it as you're replacing Karazor. It's not like I'm married to Karazor or anything like that. I respect what he does on the pitch.
Yeah.
But you no longer need him anymore. I guess it's silly. I thought we ran more of a 4-4-2 where Endo was in the middle. I would be more on board with it. But this 4-3-3 is kind of odd to me. And I don't know what's going to happen when Dan Axel comes back. So Dan Axel's Agadu had a great camp, apparently, and Bruno loves him. So when he comes back, how does that change up the back four, right? And then when Sosa comes back, because it doesn't look like Borna is going to be sold over the winter break because of his injury, where is he going to go? Which, it's a good thing to have that much talent, right? But my concern is that if I see Endo as a left wing back and I see Valdemar Anton as a right wing back, I'm really concerned, where are you going to put these guys to maximize what they're good at?
Well, I think ideally you've got those midfielders playing on the outside. Instead of playing as wing backs, you've got them playing more as true wingers and being outlets for the defense, being kind of a relief valve of team pressure, and serving in a role to get the ball up to forwards to do what they do. So if we're relying on them to be wingbacks like they were in the old three-back system, three central defenders that Reno was running, I don't think this is going to work, right? And one of the things we did see is like when we ran a 4-4, more of a 4-4-2, that central four was a diamond four, right? And so you'd have an attacking minded central and an endo in the defensive central, and they did a lot of switches back and forth and would take turns going up in the attack. But we've limited the number of different style of players that we're having by the formation that we're using. And maybe that's part of Labadia's effort to simplify things overall. I could see that, but also like, we have who we have on the roster and how is it going to, it's a fascinating puzzle.
And I don't want to rip on Bruno too much, because what is interesting is the first two games that he's been in charge, the team started in a 4-3-3. At halftime, they switched to a 3-5-2-1, 3-5-3-3. Basically, what they did is they moved Anton to right wing back, Endo moved to left wing back. And that's when they had more success. And I'm curious if they had more success simply because that's what they're used to. And if that's the case, then kudos to Bruno for being flexible enough to realize, okay, we just have to absorb pressure for the first half. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to put these guys in a position they're more comfortable and more aggressive position. We'll go for it. Because it seems like when they play that 3-5-3 or the 3-5, whatever, they seem to be much more aggressive. I wonder how many people have tuned out at this point as you and I are just shouting out numbers of 1-0-10 or whatever it might
Bingo.
Be. Omaha, as Peyton Manning used to say. Well, I don't know what the answer is to anything. I do know that the team also signed Jovan Milosevic, a 17-year-old attacker from Serbia, for about $1 million. It was kind of funny. It was Sven's last recruiting job, and I don't think the club actually wanted the kid anymore, but they were stuck because Sven had nailed down the contract. So he's going to finish out the season in Serbia. We won't see him until next season, but congratulations, Jovan, to the most stable club in the world.
Welcome aboard. It's my favorite Milosevic since Slobodan.
Oh, political. Look at you.
Little history there, professor.
Ooh, Travis Google's still slowing up.
How do you spell that, Travis?
Yeah, darn it. Time to pause the podcast. Well, let's get into the next part, which is questions. Now, there weren't any questions, but I do want to read some of these. A Village Footballer says, what is it with this team where they do some positive and then immediately concede? Leaves me scared to celebrate most weeks. It was funny. When the match was going on for the Hoffenheim match and they scored and then Ahamada got his red, I told myself, I remember Mueller had a great save at the 83rd minute. And I told myself at the 83rd minute, I'm okay with a draw. I'm okay with a draw. The first half was so bad. We were lucky to get that goal. I'm okay with a 2-2 result here. And so when they inevitably scored the tying goal in the 93rd minute or whatever it was, I was not as angry as I thought I would be, because I had already convinced myself that, hey, this is a fair result. It is what it is here. Do you celebrate anymore, Matt, or do you just go in a dark hole?
I can't help myself. I have to. We score, I get all excited, and then I feel shame for letting this team get me up again. But no.
Kai from Iceland says a win would have been deserved, but it would have been – a win would not have been deserved, but it would have been important. We got 2 points in two matches. The Hoffenheim match, honestly, we could have won, but you saw the Mainz match. Do you think we could have got three there, or is it draw there?
No, I think the way the team came out in the second half, they were playing positive, attacking football. We're out on the front foot, and they could have gotten it.
It's weird what you say. It seems like this club, it's like, all right, let's just make it a halftime. Let's make this a 45-minute match. And then we're going all out here. Dave says, hey, we're 14th now, at least.
That's second place.
Yep. Well, Dave, you're wrong. We're back to 15th. So,
sucker.
Yeah, thanks for nothing. Tim says, this was a tough pill to swallow, the Hoffenheim match. Friday is going to be tough. A point there will be a good thing. We'll get into predictions in a second, but in one word, what are you predicting for the Leipzig match?
Pain.
Mr. T is back. Best quote ever. SC Cologne, New York actually responded to us. Look at that. And said, hey, at least one third of the relegation spots are already taken. Oh, sorry, Schalke. Oh, man. I don't know if you've paid much attention to them. The guys over at Schalke America do a fantastic job. Our old friend Simone Chirota is over there. They are yikes.
I have not been. I've been watching some Chirota highlights off and on just because I miss that dude because he's great. But other than that, I've been sucked in enough on our relegation battle that I haven't had the emotional energy to invest in anybody else's.
Fair enough. They were down 4-0, and I thought the match was over. I turned on my phone, and I saw the updates. It was halftime when they were down 4. So they're struggling a bit, but I don't want to make fun of them because, yikes, that could come back to get us.
Yeah.
Flabby Viking says, now this is a difficult one for us because we're so many thousands of miles away, but Flabby Viking says, a suggestion for a possible poll, should the OFC adapt a Klaus vote off as official slogan, or Klaus go vote yourself, or possibly Klaus vote up your club? Something to ponder. So what Flabby is getting into is the increasing dissatisfaction with how the president Klaus vote is running the club. We got into this, Rob and I, a little bit last week. Somebody asked us, you know, who would you like to replace Klaus Bode as president? And we're like, Mr. T, I guess the – I don't
good answer.
Know enough to know. Real quick, though, do you have any thoughts? We weren't able to get your opinion last week. Any thoughts on what's happening in the upper management of Alpine?
It's messy, and I don't want messy. I want stable and boring. And I want to not care about what's going on behind the scenes because we shouldn't care. It should be so boring and dry and stupid that it doesn't matter. And the fact that it's not is frustrating.
All I heard from that is you don't want Lionel Messi. That's all I heard.
Specify. I think I should be the club president because I can do boring and dry and stuffy.
There's so many jokes there, I can't even think of one right now. Darn it, that was such a softball. Well done.
Send your best jokes to that, to at Mount Bay Americana.
Okay, Ben Duncan actually asked a pretty legit question here that I like. Not that nobody else did. We appreciate all your comments for sure.
Ben Duncan is our favorite.
You can take the manager out of Stuttgart, but you can't take the Stuttgart out of whoever is standing on the touchline. What I like about this question, he says, is how can we have hope after these last 180 minutes? I don't like that question because we're Stuttgart fans. We have to have hope because it's pretty much what we got. Here's what I like about what Ben said. It sounds silly, but it's literally no different than when Reno was at the helm. I agree. It's hard to argue that if Reno was still here, the results would be any different than where we're at. We're at 15th place with 16 points, is that it, in 17 matches. Vimmer, I think, is the leader. How many points? Does he have 6 or 9, something like that? It's basically the same as what it was. And I think that's part of what concerns me the most, is that whether it's Pellegrino, who is very comforting and aggressive, or Bruno, who's very practical and defensive, it's all the same.
We swapped currants for carrots and the cookie stays the same.
You are an honorary Schmidbauer, buddy.
The family we yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know what? We played a plastic club on Tuesday. We're playing a plastic club on Friday. Hannes needs to come and tell us exactly what it is I just said because I don't know, plastic, whatever. Hoffenheim is a club sponsored by a billionaire. Leipzig is a club sponsored by a billionaire corporation. Well, we're traveling to Leipzig, Matt. So this is where we're going to wrap up the podcast. We have a Friday game. So we're the only game on Friday. We are, in the 9 matches we've played, 0 wins, 2 draws, 7 losses. We are minus 14 goal differential. We have only scored two goals against them. Our last match, though, was this opening season. We had a 1-1 draw. Ahamada scored the first goal. The only other Stuttgart player to ever score a goal is famous Steven Zuber, who now plays, I believe, for the Greek League. To make you feel better, Matt, because I can tell from your face that I'm really...
I was going to say, now deliver the bad news.
Leipzig just drew with Bayern Munich on the weekend. They blew out Schalke 6-1 and were up 4-0 at halftime. How are you feeling about this one?
Not great, Bob. The difference we have this time is that we are in a more defensive posture to start. So there is some hope potentially that we could play bunker ball and escape with a draw. I don't know that I see that happening. But if we can come out of the game without embarrassing ourselves and without damaging our already not great goal differential too much more, I think we lick our wounds and move on.
It's funny because that's becoming one of the biggest talking points right now for the league, is that, or at least the bottom part of the table, is that our goal difference isn't that bad relative to everybody else. So Schalke's got minus 27. They're only at 9 points. Hertha is minus 10. They're at 14 points. Bochum is 16th, minus 22, 16 points. We got minus 9, 16. Augsburg had a nice win today to leapfrog us into 14. Yeah, I don't have any hope going into this one. It's a Friday match. It sounds awful to say, but my attention is obviously going to be on the game on Friday. It'll be awesome to watch. Mm-hmm. I'm going to force my students last period of the day to watch a half hour with Mr. A on there. But I have zero expectations on this. The thing I am excited about, though, to be positive, is if we can take some positive out of the red card and the injuries, is maybe we will see some of these other players get an opportunity. Enzo Malone, Juan Perea.
Yeah.
I don't know if Furic is ready to play a full 90 minutes yet, but maybe we'll see him from the go. I do like what you're saying is, if we go in and we play bunker ball against Leipzig, maybe we got a shot, at this one to get a draw. I don't think I would bet on them. As I said last episode, gambling is now legal in Ohio, so we are full on degenerate here. The spread for this one, Stuttgart is the underdog. How many goals do you think the betting websites are giving Valve in this one?
1.5.
One goal.
Oh.
All right. So, Matt, you are – let's wrap this up real quick. Let's scroll down my notes here to see exactly where we're at. You are leading our betting
– Yes.
Yes, you are in the lead over myself, Jeff, and Austin. Now, Jeff won the last 2 weeks, okay? You are picking Stuttgart matches 10-6, so you and I are tied here. Jeff is only 8-8, but you are in the lead overall. 65 wins to Austin's 60 to my 57. You just have a commanding lead in this one. How do you see Friday going?
So if they give Stuttgart a goal, if we tie or lose by one, and I pick Stuttgart, I win, right?
We've been doing this for 3 years, Matt.
Then what now? I felt the need to channel Rob. It was funny to listen to you try and explain spreads and stuff to Rob last week.
Yeah. I edited most of that out too, by the way.
I could see us keeping it within one. But we've looked a little too shaky lately. I don't know. I'm going to take Leipzig in this one.
Yeah, I don't have much hope in this one. And that's okay. I mean, Leipzig is the number two team in the league. I think what you said is, yeah, if we can go in, learn more about the club, learn more about Bruno's system. The thing that's a little scary, but I do understand it, is what Bruno was saying. It take him about 5-6 weeks before his system was implemented by the guys. That's a little frightening because, well, the season is starting, and by the time we get to mid-February, that could be kind of a scary place to be. But I do think it will take some time to get these guys into it. I'm excited to see some of the younger kids. Hopefully we get to see some new players. you know, out there. And it's always interesting to go into a match where you don't expect a result because you're kind of already half mentally out the door anyway. So you're like, eh, mm-hmm. you know, whatever happens, happens. There are some other matches. So let's wrap it up with this and then we'll thankfully call it quits. We've got on Saturday in the Bundesliga matches that matter to us. We've got Freiburg is playing Augsburg. Hertha is hosting Union Berlin. Mainz is hosting Bochum. That's on Saturday. And then on Sunday, let's look it up real quick. We have got Schalke and Cologne. If you were able to watch any of those matches, which one do you think is going to be key for Stuttgart?
I think Freiburg-Augsburg will be the most important. The one that interests me the most personally is Schalke-Cologne. Because I want to see if Schalke can bounce back after that shellacking.
And Cologne has played great. They got a draw against Bayern. They destroyed Bremen. So it's mm-hmm. funny, though. I was talking to Jeff, the Cologne supporter. They're only at like 21 or 22 points, and we're at 16 points. It's actually – I was telling him, I was like, yeah, anybody that's got 20 points is totally safe at this point. He's like, did you just hear what you said? That makes no sense. And he's right. The table is still crazy close. Even Schalke, who's only got 9 points, still isn't out of it totally. So as we wrap this up, Matt, this has been a somewhat depressing episode as you came back. So I'm going to put this on you. Do you have any last words of wisdom, any kind of hope or positivity? Because that is something we try to hang our hat on the podcast here for anybody that's still listening to this.
Well, I will take the pessimism and the low energy blame on this. I'll own that. I have some hope that the injuries, the red cards are going to open up some opportunities for some of the younger guys we've been wanting to see anyway. It's forcing Bruno's hand to lean on these guys a little bit, and hopefully they take advantage of these opportunities and we see some positive development. And they show Bruno that they're capable and they can do stuff when we see guys like Juan Perea more on the field, because I think we really need a step forward from some of the kids in order to see progress this year. If we're going to be relying on the same guys who've been starting all season, I don't see it happening.
I don't know how positive that was.
I'm not sure that was positive. we get to see new shiny people on the field. That's exciting.
We get to see carrots or currants. We're not sure which. We'll see one of them. All right, Matt. Thanks so much for joining us this episode. Oh, you want me to mail you some Hasselhoff cookies? Would you like some of that?
Yeah. Yes.
Carrots or currants? Which one?
Yes. I got to compare.
All right, buddy. Thanks so much for joining us. Welcome back to 2023, by the way. Great to have you back here. We will talk to you hopefully next week after a surprising big win on the road. What do you say?
Looking forward to it, and got my fingers crossed that I am very wrong about how this weekend's going to go.
No, hopefully everything we said is completely bogus. We'll see.
That would be very on brand.
It would be. All right, my friend, I will talk to you next time.
Thanks, Travis.